Go in 3, 2, 1.
Hello. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks challenging a call means barking loudly while the other host is on the phone. I am thrilled today to be joined by an old internet friend slash IRL friend, a writer for fieldgoals.com, so it's Seahawks internet friend. You can hear him on the radio, on KJR in Seattle, and now you can hear him on my podcast, Jackson Bevins. Welcome to the show, bud.
Hey, thanks, Mina. I appreciate you having me on.
Just before we get into all of the stuff I want to talk about today, I should add, Jackson does some of my favorite game recaps on Field Goals of Seahawks games. But, and you know, is it funny? Originally, Jackson, when I booked you, I thought we would absolutely do no Seahawks talk at all. I really try not to go full homer here. But then, you know, I booked it for today, and we happen to be on the heels of, really, I don't know if I would call it the best game of the year. It certainly wasn't the best football of the year. But it was definitely the wildest game of the year. Does that sound fair to you?
It does. And one of the highest leverage games of the year as well. I mean, I still think the opening Monday night game between the Texans and the Saints is gonna hold up all season long. But this game was absolutely wild. I mean, just the swings and win probability from start to finish were just totally crazy. And, yeah, it was just an awesome thing to watch. I watched it with a couple of Niner friends and a couple of Seahawks friends, and it was just an awesome experience.
My friend Kevin Clark, who's been a guest on the show, tweeted afterwards, "The Seahawks have never played a normal football game," which is so accurate. So I want to talk briefly about that, but I want to talk about it in a little bit of a different way. I recapped the game with my buddy Bill Barnwell on his podcast. You guys can check that out. But with you, Jackson, I kind of want to spin it forward, and rather than talk about, you know, everything that happened in the game, because these are two teams that are going to be extremely relevant going forward in the playoff. I think you mentioned this is a high leverage game. I think both of them now have, you know, extremely high playoff probability. I want to talk about sort of the lessons from that game and what it might mean for the rest of the season and the postseason. Then after that, guys, we're going to do what we intended to do with this show. I've been wanting to talk about the Cam Newton situation in Carolina, and also just kind of looking around the league after thinking about Cam and what it might mean for him to, you know, hit the market, the trade market. Just looking around the league, I was really struck by how much quarterback uncertainty there is going to be next season, how many teams this year have to make big decisions as it pertains to position going forward. So for most of the episode, we're going to run through a bunch of those teams, starting with Carolina, and we're going to talk about that. But first, I want to talk about this game, and I want to start on the Niners side. Jackson, obviously they were missing a number of players and lost a number of players as the game went on. I think most notably Emmanuel Sanders. You really saw that change the nature of the offense and what they were able to do. But watching this game, let me start with the defense, because obviously this is one of the best units in the NFL. Did your opinion at all change about this Niners defense?
No, not at all. I mean, with the Seahawks, you know, I think we've gotten used to them being this sort of old school, run it a bunch, rely on great defense, and that's who they are. And then, you know, hopefully Russ makes some plays down the stretch to win. This Seahawks team has, I think, really done a good job of embracing a new identity, and I think they're the highest scoring team in the NFC this year. So for them to have been held down the way that they were, not getting an offensive touchdown until the second half, and really having to fight for every single first down that they got, was a testament to how good the 49ers defense is, because Seattle's been scoring at a pretty efficient pace all season long.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think both defenses, the bigger surprise was the Seahawks defense, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
There was nothing surprising about this. The only thing I would say, Jackson, that was surprising to me about the Niners defense, and I think does matter going forward, is just how many randos played well. Randos is like a really, it's like the wrong word, but it's crazy how weirdly deep this defense is, right? Like, Quan Alexander was lost for the season, and so kind of going into the game, I was curious to see how the backup linebackers played, whether they'd use more dime. And you saw guys like Dre Greenlaw, who had the interception, play extremely well. I think Fred Warner was a beast. I think last week that I thought the linebacker position would be a weakness, but actually I think they all played extremely at a pretty high level. I mean, Emmanuel Mosley, who's been their backup cornerback, also played well. Kaywan Williams. So setting aside the obvious guys like your Nick Bosa's, who was, you know, incredible, DeForest Buckner, there have been so many minor players on this Niners defense that have stepped up and looked really good to me.
Well, I mean, they have built something really special. And I think it's Robert Saleh that's their defensive coordinator, and he is just a hoot. You know, he's the most entertaining assistant coach in the NFL, and it's easy. I think that buy-in is a really hard thing to quantify, and so I have a tendency to sort of write it off, but I think you also know it when you see it. And, you know, being a Seahawks fan and covering that team, you see how effective it is when you get an entire team to buy into a scheme. And sure, you know, the Seahawks then and the Niners now have a lot of really top-end defensive individual talent, but, you know, Seattle, when they were making their run and winning 10 to 13 games every year and going deep in the playoffs every time, they had a lot of injuries that they worked through, and they still led the NFL in scoring defense 4 years in a row. And I think that speaks to scheme, and it speaks to everyone buying in. And when you do have over-the-top, absolutely peak-of-their-position talent like the Niners do, then it does allow, I think, a little bit of grace and a little bit of margin for error for some of those new guys to get up to speed. And Seattle's offense, you know, for as much grief as I've given them for some of their more vanilla game plans early in games and early in the season, they're a pretty dynamic offense. And I thought that San Francisco held up really, really well against it.
Absolutely. I think your point about how if you have true stars on the defense, you know, you can kind of... It goes without saying that it makes life easier for everyone else, but your margin of error increases a great deal. And I think you saw that, by the way, in Seattle on defense as well in this game, right? I've always felt with the Seahawks defense, Jackson, they've been below average this whole season. I don't think they've been the worst in the NFL by any means, but, you know, I've consistently felt that they were kind of in that maybe like 20 to 25 range.
Yeah.
Last night, they looked phenomenal, and I think what you saw was, okay, if you just have a couple of players who are really good, in this case I would say Jadeveon Clowney obviously was the best player in the field, but also like a Shaquille Griffin, right, then it suddenly just makes life easier for everyone else. And then you've got guys like a Quandre Diggs, safety they traded for, kind of stepping up a little bit. Trey Flowers making a big play here and there, but the margin of error shrinks a bit when you've got someone like Clowney just completely take over a game.
Yeah, totally. You know, and you and I have talked about this before. I mean, I don't think Seattle has had a top 20 defense in the NFL this year. And I think you'd probably agree with that prior to this game. Now, before we start getting too effusive about how Seattle played, and they were awesome on defense last night. I mean, very, very good. We really got to give the weight necessary to the injuries to Kittle and Emmanuel Sanders. Those are absolute field-changing players. Seattle does not have an answer for George Kittle. I mean, who does, right? But George Kittle changes that game for sure. We also need to talk about the fact that the Niners dropped 9 passes. I don't know if I've ever seen an NFL game that wasn't played in a total downpour where there were 9 drop passes. So, you know, Seattle, while I think that they got burned by a couple of high-leverage ticky-tack calls on the officials, and I also think that they played really well, they did benefit from some injuries and just some poor play from San Francisco's receiving corps. Now, all of that being out of the way, what we saw from Jadeveon Clowney last night was peak defensive line play. And there's a lot of people who are going to look at what he's going to cost on a new contract, and they're going to look at his sack numbers, which I think is like 4 on the season, and say, you can't pay that guy. And I get that if you just look at it, but if you're watching Jadeveon play every week, like we are fortunate to do, his disruption is absolutely through the roof. I mean, we're talking Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack type disruption this year. And he made Garoppolo so uncomfortable and pushed so many of their run plays. San Francisco runs this really beautiful, complex trap style running game with pulling guards and fullbacks and multiple tight ends, and it's really just running game porn. But in order for that to work, it's really important that running backs get to certain spots at certain times so that they have their angles. And Clowney, even if he wasn't making the tackle, he was taking those angles away. And now you had Tevin Coleman and Matt Breda and Raheem Mostert trying to improvise. And that's not how that offense works. So the sheer tonnage of disruption that he created on top of five tackles, five quarterback hits, a sack, a fumble recovery for a touchdown, a fumble forced, 11 quarterback pressures. I mean, the amount of disruption that he created allowed Seattle's defense, the rest of the defense, to attack in ways that they haven't been able to. Seattle's defense has had to be so reactive this year instead of proactive, which is so bizarre to watch because they haven't had any semblance of pass rush. But to see Jaron Reed winning, and obviously Clowney, Ansa got a couple of wins, and he's really been struggling this year. You saw how much it changes everything for the defense and how much more aggressive the secondary and linebackers can be.
Well, first, you left out Puna Ford.
How could I leave out Puna?
Yeah, I know.
I'm so sorry, offensive. Puna. Puna's the man.
I know. Half a sack, I believe, yeah. But, no, I'm actually glad you mentioned Clowney's effect on the run game. Our friend Danny Kelly tweeted about this today. You know, for all of the attention that's been given to how he made Garoppolo's life miserable. He's always been an elite run defender. If anything, he's been a better run defender than a pass rusher. But in this game in particular, you're right. I think you saw that elite, how, I guess, skillful he is. And you're right. It's like the angles he takes. It's the mind games he plays, and his awareness to sort of read a complex run scheme is really remarkable. And it was fascinating to me, Jackson, to see how Seattle tackled, literally, the run game. At times, and early in the game, you saw them do the 6x1 thing that teams have been doing to the Rams to try to stop outside zone, right, where they line up six guys at the line of scrimmage, which can be very effective, but you can counter that with things like tosses and pulling, and also if you've got like a Kittle, right, or with a quick passing game, because obviously you're down a linebacker. And in the beginning of the game when they had Sanders, they were able to, I think, exploit that a little bit. But once he went out, that was just such a massive impact on the game, and you saw that. And just, and then even later on the game too, when they didn't do it and they were just rushing four, I mean, Clowney got all of his QB pressures without blitzing. And, you know, that is absolutely what it takes to counter this offense. So let's end here, okay, about the Niners. Yeah. Because like you said, I agree with you. The defense is fine. There's nothing, I think, to worry about with that respect. Do you think, did this game, you mentioned the impact of not having Kittle and Sanders. Did it change your opinion at all of this Niners offense, Jimmy Garoppolo, and sort of what he's capable of down the stretch?
Well, I don't think we know yet. I mean, look, you can only luck your way into so many wins in the NFL, and I think even with the loss, Garoppolo's like 17-3 as an NFL starter. There's obviously talent there. What we haven't seen yet is him have to go out and win games. You know, it's almost like he's been sitting at the wheel of a self-driving car, and everything has worked for the Niners so far this year, and they faced real adversity last night, and he was not able to overcome that. And I'm not putting all of that on Garoppolo. The drops were crazy, and then the Seahawks did not have an answer.
How about our drops? How about KJ Wright's drops?
Oh my goodness. Maybe Garoppolo just throws really uncatchable ball. I swear, half the balls that hit it, receivers or defenders in the hands were dropped.
It went both ways. Yeah.
But it was something that I tweeted in down the stretch in that game is we just haven't seen Garoppolo need to go win a game yet, and he had to do it, and his numbers were awful. in the second half. Now, granted, the Seahawks wouldn't have had an answer for Kittle. They just don't have that player. And they certainly didn't have an answer for Emmanuel Sanders out of the slot. So maybe that changes some things. But, you know, what we saw was the Niners offense that didn't score an offensive touchdown in the last 60 minutes of that game. And even the one they did had two third downs converted on ones that would have been stopped thanks to defensive penalties. So, I would say there is some concern for that offense. Can they go out and score points in crunch time against good defenses the way you're going to need to advance in the playoffs? I'm not saying they can't. They just didn't show it last night.
I think that's fair. I would say I do think Garoppolo won, in a sense, the Cardinals game. Not that that's a good defense, per se.
Sure,
But his performance in that game was really impressive. Mm-hmm. But Jackson, I mean, what we haven't seen is whether he can do it, you know, consistently. Certainly not in this case. Because before that Cardinals game, I mean, just by just about every metric, he was running, as you described, the driverless car, extremely simple offense. And in this last game, you know, he had like 3.6 completed air yards per attempt. Mm-hmm. Again, the drops killed that. And I mentioned this to Bill. Russell Wilson actually had the lowest completed air yards per attempt of any quarterback in the NFL this week.
Wow.
The only difference was he actually had a higher completion percentage above expected per next gen stats because he made the plays and Garoppolo
just does that. That is probably the thing that Sam, I mean, we haven't even talked about Seattle's offense today, and I certainly don't mean to derail you, but I'm glad you mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Maybe the thing that stands out about Russell Wilson more than anything, and we love to talk about, his elusiveness and these backyard football plays and all that stuff. That dude's ability to complete high difficulty passes, I mean, in my lifetime, we're talking like maybe Breeze and maybe Rodgers that I've seen do it with that consistency. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people call me a homer for this, but the stats back it up. On his downfield throws, he might be the most accurate downfield passer on the planet.
I think that's fair. And by the way, Garoppolo was 3-for-18 in this game on passes over 10 yards.
Oh.
Now, again, you know, that said, I think, by the way, with Wilson, the only real play where I was really like, ooh, with the Niners defense was that 18-yard run at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they were doing there. But aside from that, yeah, I think that defense is so good. I think they can still, they're still a Super Bowl caliber team, even without a great Jimmy Garoppolo. He just can't turn the ball over like he did last night, to say nothing of the fumbles. So we go from there in those two teams that are, you know, set at the quarterback position to a bunch of teams that are, shall we say, experiencing some turmoil or there's some indecision perhaps. And I think, you know, I want to start with Carolina because this is a team that, I've been pondering a while what they should do. And Jackson, I'll say I'm a big fan of Cam Newton's game. It's funny. During his MVP season, like a lot of Seahawks fans, I thought he was almost a little bit overrated. But I think the dialogue around him is so screwed up that I've found myself very defensive of him. And I think because of that, a conclusion I came to last weekend while watching the Panthers-Packers game closely was I think I underrated Kyle Allen. So I want to start there because the latest thing we're hearing from Carolina, or I guess from sources close to Carolina, Cam Newton is considering surgery for his Lisfranc injury, and Ian Rappaport reported that an off-season trade looks likely. Now, if you had asked me about this again, like a couple weeks ago, I would have said, that's stupid, what are you going to do? You know, but I'm now a little bit undecided for a few reasons. One, and we'll talk about Kyle Allen, I think he does have a lot of upside as a developmental prospect. And then two, I think they can get a lot for Cam Newton, especially once we go through the list of teams that need quarterbacks. So let's start there. Do you think it makes sense for Carolina to consider trading him and his, you know, cheap contract?
To consider? Absolutely. To back up a little bit and just talk about Cam Newton. As a football fan, I love Cam Newton. And I totally get why he rubs some people the wrong way. And he is, you know, there's body language stuff that is non-ideal for your franchise quarterback, and some of the personality stuff, I get it. I love him. I think his game is so fun, so fascinating. One criticism that I absolutely have no time for with Cam is that he's not tough, and people love to point to that fumble in the Super Bowl. But we're talking about the most effective short yardage runner in NFL history, not just for quarterbacks, we're talking period. There is nobody who has been better at getting the hardest yard on the field than Cam Newton, and that can't be overlooked. And I think that he is so dynamic that, yeah, you know, I'm sure you can get, you can fetch a really nice return in a trade. I mean, you look at, is he better than Jimmy Garoppolo? I think so. And Garoppolo got a huge return. You know, would you rather have Cam Newton than the number one overall pick in next year's draft? Maybe. You know, he is that good.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Cam Newton is kind of what you're hoping. How many number one overall picks go on to have careers as successful as Cam Newton's has been right now? And so I do think you consider it, and you certainly see what you can get. And even if Kyle Allen isn't your QB of the future, I do think he's shown that he is good enough that he can, you know, win games with this team, and you could build a team around him. And if you find yourself in a position to then go get a top tier quarterback or a high, you know, a top prospect, then you do it. Kyle Allen doesn't seem like the type of quarterback that you say, okay, we can't go get somebody else. But you're not out there. You're not, you know, you're not running Ryan Finley out there. Kyle Allen has shown that he can play. So yeah, you see what you can get for him. Now where Cam lands, I think becomes a really big deal, because when it comes to the quarterback, it's such a different position than anywhere else on the field, because you're the face of the franchise, and there's so much that's going to be looked into in terms of how you conduct yourself, what you say, your press conferences, how you dress, how you sit on the bench, all of that stuff. And there are just some cities that, and some franchises, some organizations that are going to be more tolerant of the way Cam goes about his business than others. So I think with Cam Newton, you really need to make sure that there's a organizational fit with him on top of there being a schematic fit and things like that.
Well, I would, in this particular draft, I think a first round, a number one pick is just too valuable with, and we're going to get to the Bengals and Dolphins shortly, who are the teams, you know, in that conversation. I think the problem with Cam Jackson, if it was healthy Cam, I would absolutely agree, but sure. I think just the injuries are so questionable at this point, right? Yep. Like, it's really hard to gauge his trade value without knowing how healthy he is.
And that's what makes,
I would
this
say, right? Yeah, it's tough. It's tough, right? It's hard for Carolina to decide as well. I mean, they more than anyone know how healthy he actually is. And mm-hmm. I think that's, if I would say right now, with the level of uncertainty around him, if you think, okay, let's say, like, the most realistic outcome. Okay, he's on track to get back for the start of next season, but there might be some uncertainty this offseason with his program. I would say a team like, we're going to talk about Chicago next, I would put them in this category. There's some other teams that we're going to get to. We're going to put a pin in Cam Newton and bring him up, basically, at every team from this point forward.
Yep.
But I think so. It obviously depends on the team and what they're willing to get rid of, but I do think you could look at, like, a, I don't know, maybe like a second or third type thing, just because of the injuries. But it does make sense for Carolina, I think, because of what Kyle Allen has shown and because he's so freaking cheap and what you can do with that contract.
I think I lost you there.
Now, I think he has been inconsistent. He clearly has a fumbling problem. But in this Green Bay game, you know, he had a weird fumble where he, like, kind of sat on the football, and then he had a horrible interception, really, really bad interception. But aside from that, he was extremely accurate. He has a strong arm. He can make every throw. I think his anticipation was really impressive to me. He was putting balls, you know, perfectly, placing deep shots perfectly in particular, where only the receivers could get them. It was more just the decision making. it kind of reminded me a little bit of Gardner Minshew, actually, in terms of, like, you know, skill set and floor. And I think, and we'll get, we're actually going to talk about Jacksonville later, I just think that's enough probably for Carolina to want to put him in that category of competition, unless they think Cam is healthy, in which case, screw all of this and just stick with him.
I actually just got a update, a little news report that Colin Kaepernick, how nicely does this dovetail with what we're talking about, is holding a open workout that NFL teams can attend. So that's going to be super interesting to see what happens. That could upend this entire conversation.
It really does. And it's interesting that you're talking about Cam and, like, not just schematic fit, but organizational fit, because I think that's obviously first and foremost the thing with Kaepernick. And it's funny, if the Panthers, who we were talking about, if they didn't have Kyle Allen, if he hadn't been playing that well, they would strike me as the type of organization that might actually take a jump at Kaepernick. Just because, you know, they do have Eric Reid. They've got an owner who's fairly open-minded. I think probably that quarterback group is a little bit too crowded right now. You know, it's not just Kyle Allen, but they've also got Will Greer they drafted in there. Yeah, but that's really interesting. I wonder, this is just kind of spitballing, but, like, you got to wonder if, like, teams are looking at what Greg Roman's been doing in Baltimore and thinking, hey... that's working. Not that they're, you know, the same player, but just from a scheme perspective. Well, let's go to the next team. And again, put a pin in Kaepernick and let's think through as we go through these quarterback hungry teams. I don't think this is a team that would take a jump at him, but why do I keep saying take a jump, by the way? I don't even think that's an expression, but I don't think there's a team that would leap at the opportunity to sign him, but I want to talk about Chicago, a team that, that's the right reaction. I mean, most people think they're going to do something at quarterback, not necessarily, you know, move on from Mitch, but at least introduce some competition. He did have probably his best game of the season on Sunday. Don't think personally that means a ton. He still can make, like, a couple of big throws a game, but he still struggles with, you know, very simple intermediate and short passes at times, reading the field. If you're Chicago, what do you do at quarterback next year?
You cut bait as soon as you can. I'm a big believer in identifying sunk cost in life, and Mitchell Trubisky is a Titanic sunk cost. You know, that's going to be remembered, certainly by me and I'm sure by others, as one of the worst draft day decisions that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
To trade up one spot when you have two quarterbacks who I think will end up in the Hall of Fame on the board in Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson to get Mitch Trubisky, who is just torpedoing a Super Bowl roster. And yeah, I mean, it's just at some point you just got to wonder if a guy can succeed in that environment anymore. And I personally think Matt Nagy runs a really quarterback-friendly offense. I mean, it's a very Andy Reid-esque offense that, while it's a bit complicated from a terminology standpoint, it is designed to get really dynamic playmakers open in space. And that happens in Chicago. Allen Robinson, Tariq Cohen, you know, they got Montgomery now. These are dynamic players. Taylor Gabriel is a really fun little switchblade player. And he just can't make it work. You said he had his best game of the season. I agree. It was one good quarter. And,
yeah,
you know, I think they had negative yards in the first half of that game. And so I think you get out of there as quickly as you can. There's no salvaging his trade value. He's poison at this point. And, you know, on a personal level, yeah, I think so. I mean,
escalating it.
maybe. But, I mean, if you're another quarterback-hungry team, do you see anything in Mitchell Trubisky, other than the fact that he was drafted number two overall, where you would give up a modicum of value to make him your next guy?
Yeah. I would not. I think I've seen people argue, well, the offensive line is bad. They are bad, man. They've really regressed.
Yep.
But,
sure.
You know, just watching even that good quarter, a lot of those sacks are on Trubisky. Now, so not all of them, but he a lot of them are on him holding on to the ball for too long. And I agree. I think largely even when you look back, look, I wasn't a huge believer last year, but even when you look back at the highs, right, the multiple touch, like they hit like that 6-touchdown game or whatever, you don't see traits consistently enough, I think, to buy low. If it's me,
I agree.
I agree about the roster too. I mean, free Allen Robinson, he's so good. He's such a good player.
He's so good. That,
why Jacksonville let him go?
It's oh, so my goodness. He is really something else. And you know, I do want to clarify. I don't think that Mitchell Trubisky is like a poisonous personality or anything like that. He seems to be handling this as well as someone can. He
seems very nice.
He's broken in that city right now. And maybe he can rehab the career with a fresh start somewhere else. It's just almost impossible to see him succeeding in Chicago. So if I'm Chicago, I'm not waiting. You know, I mean, you've got good talent around you. How long are you going to let that defense languish? You know, you've got a Super Bowl caliber defense. You need to maximize it. It kind of reminds me of when the Bengals put together what I thought was the most talented roster in the NFL for 3 or 4 years in a row, but got caught in quarterback purgatory with, okay, are we starting over with a new quarterback or do we make Andy Dalton a top 5 paid quarterback? There's no in between. And they decided to go with Dalton and it just never worked. And I think Chicago is in danger of being in a really similar situation.
Chicago would kill for Andy Dalton, or they should, by the way. I remember that was being thrown
Dalton
around
is better
as
than
a,
Trubisky, for sure.
100%. Yes. It was being thrown around as a trade rumor, right, before the deadline, and I really wanted them to do it.
Because
we've seen
move.
What Andy, we've seen how he is very good in, he's not a very, very good quarterback, but he's one of those quarterbacks who, if you put him in the perfect environment, like 2015, you know, he is very good. He absolutely plays up to
his
surroundings.
He led the NFL in passer rating that year. No question.
He was tremendous. Now, that was an awesome offensive line. Obviously not the case in Chicago, but at least you got weapons. I think I agree with you. I wish they had made a trade. I think now going into next season, it's funny. So, you know, we mentioned Colin Kaepernick. You know, I teased Bears fan Robert Mays. He tweeted something about talking himself into Tannehill. And I said, sure, but I said this, I was kind of joking, but I'm kind of not. I think the Titans might actually try to keep Ryan Tannehill, who's been playing really well. But I think a quarterback of that level, like a veteran, right? Cause they're not going to pick high enough, I think, to get any rookies probably. Or I don't know. I haven't thought through exactly the class and where the guys are. Well. Yeah. Right. Well, that's certainly true. So, yeah, but I do think, like, a Tannehill would be, I mean, heck, even Mariota makes sense there.
Here's my question for you, Nina. As you're putting yourself in the shoes of these GMs and head coaches for each of these teams, what is your goal? Is your goal to get better or is your goal to compete for a championship?
Well, I think it depends on the timeline of the team. I think the Bears' goal should be to compete for a championship.
Is Tannehill a realistic option for that? Are you winning a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill, even in a perfect situation?
I don't know if there are quarterbacks you can win a Super Bowl with available.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'm thinking about like a Cam Newton in Chicago, though. I think Cam Newton in Chicago, you are a Super Bowl contender immediately.
I love that identity fit too.
Yes.
You know, I love the idea of Cam Newton with that offense and Allen Robinson. Well, we're going to talk about Tannehill, at length, not at great length, I promise you, a little bit later on. But first, we're going to take some questions. And before I do that, I'm going to tell you quickly about ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura's CEO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that is how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA. ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
Thank you guys for your questions, for your nice reviews as well. Powering through, we are in September. I am getting sort of caught up to some of the questions. We're going to start with one from EE547, who asks me to rank Twitter fan bases. All right, we're not going to rank all the Twitter fan bases, but Jackson, I do want to ask you, who do you think is the best NFL Twitter fan base? Objectionable. It's definitely not Seattle.
No.
We are terrible.
No, we're, I mean, yeah, we've got our own charm for sure. But yeah, the best, I don't know. You know, Vikings Twitter seems pretty cool. Bills Twitter seems pretty cool. Jacksonville's Twitter seems pretty cool.
I love Jaguars Twitter. Yeah.
But, you know, I honestly am not as exposed nationally to them as you are. You know, I think people come to my Twitter feed through the lens of me being a Seahawks guy. And while I try and follow a lot of people who cover various other NFL teams, I'm not really interacting with the people who make up that Twitter family. So I'm a little unqualified to say. And so, you know, apologies cut that out. But I think Jacksonville's
like, who's been the great. Least rude.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, for sure.
I like the quirkier fan bases. I respect fan bases of losing teams the most, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're clearly the most dedicated. You know, in the NFC West, I really like Cardinals Twitter, actually.
They're a lot they're a lot easier to like now that Arians is gone, in my opinion.
Well, and I love Kyler. I think that also influences it for me.
Yep.
Next question is from FratStar421, who wants to know if Patrick Mahomes, this was told before the season, so it's kind of not possible now, but if he had thrown for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns again, won the Super Bowl and MVP, and then immediately retired, would he be a Hall of Famer?
Be the greatest flex walkaway of all time. What do you think?
I mean, if Eli is a Hall of Famer for winning 2 Super Bowls without ever being dominant, I feel like Mahomes, for being incredibly dominant in 2 seasons, should be in consideration.
That would be so awesome. I mean, you know, for me, the Hall of Fame credentials is, you know, did he make, you know, to what degree did he make the game better? That's one of them, right? It's not the only one. I do think there is room for guys who are just really good for a really long time, like Curtis Martin or Fred Taylor, or guys that were maybe never the best at their position, but were top 5 to top 10 for a very long time. And I think there's a place in the in the Hall of Fame for them. But, you know, I mean, how long was Bo Jackson's career, right? 4 or 5 years. And I don't even know if he has the numbers to back it up, but everyone knows Bo Jackson. I mean, Bo Jackson is woven into the very fabric of the NFL. And he was a seminal player that launched the evolution of athleticism forward. And so that's what Patrick Mahomes is. He's the Steph Curry of the NFL. He came in and you say he did that from where? And oh, that's actually a normal part of their offense now. He is changing in the same way that Steph Curry almost single-handedly changed spacing in the NBA. Patrick Mahomes is changing what a quarterback can do and how you can spread a field when you have that kind of talent. And there's going to be kids growing up that see, oh, that's what a quarterback can do. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see more and more of it. So, I would put him in if he did it. I mean, if he did that, had that season and then just walked away, man, crown the dude. That would be awesome.
Yeah, right. If you thought Andrew Luck was, you know, soft. I don't think that, obviously, for walking away. That would be amazing. The discourse.
It would be.
Jordan asks, if what I would, what would I think about aligning, realigning NFL conference or divisions, but with similar team names? He has many examples. For example, a division for the Jaguars, Panthers, Lions, and Bengals, the Seahawks, Cardinals, Eagles, Ravens. You probably put the Falcons in that group. The Vikings, Bucks, Raiders, Chiefs. I don't hate these team comps. Let's just focus on one
this
division.
This is awesome.
To keep it. I know my questions are great. Well, how would you feel about a bird conference? Let's focus on that. Seahawks, Cardinals, Eagles, Ravens, Falcons. I feel like it's too good. That would be
that
my
is,
only
that would
That's
be a
too
tough,
good.
That'd be a tough one to come out of for sure. You know, this sounds like an 80s movie, like Bloodsport or Warriors or something like that, where you have like all these little gangs, you know, and then you come out of the, you know, you come out of these. Kind of
representing the birds, representing right, the like exactly. you know aggressive humans, yeah.
right. So I know. I sure. Why not? That would be great.
I'm looking at these lists. Also, he has Patriots, Texans, Cowboys, Saints. That's a tough one too.
These are great. What a great idea.
The Seuss asks. Okay, I'm just going to ask you this one. If you could have three players, one QB, one running back, left tackle. And one of them would be a top 10 player, one of them would be a middle tier player, and one would be a bottom 10 player. How would you allocate it?
Whoa, what a great question.
Top 10 QB.
So we've got
top 10 QB, right?
Yeah, top 10 QB for sure. And then the other one is left tackle and what?
Running back. So you take the bottom running back, middle left tackle.
Yeah,
right?
I think so. No, I mean, it's its own conversation.
Replace
for sure.
Running back with cornerback. Do it again. Replace Ooh. Running back with cornerback.
I think a top 10 quarterback has a better chance of overcoming a bottom third left tackle. Just because we've seen it. We've seen great quarterbacks overcome bad offensive lines.
Really?
Yeah. Boy, does that strike close to home? I think that can be done. If you can't cover in the NFL, you got no shot. You just got no shot.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers have an awesome team outside of their secondary. They can't cover anybody, and they're like two wins, three wins.
Their left tackle is also a problem. But
right?
Yeah.
Sure. But I would probably sacrifice my left tackle to have a competent corner. I think so. If my quarterback is good enough.
Soccer player, something, a bunch of numbers, says the Packers remind him of the 2016 Falcons. That's interesting. He wants to know, but let's just kind of keep it at this. Do you think they can reach the Super Bowl? The Packers are weird to me, Jackson, because I watched that Packers-Panthers game very closely because I wanted to watch Kyle Allen, as I mentioned. And the Packers are, 8-2, right? Something like that?
Yep.
They have Aaron Rodgers. I was crazy about this defense coming into the season. The run game is clicking, and yet I don't think they're dominant at all. I don't know. I'm still not sold.
Yeah, you know, I think that this is a pretty wide-open year. I mean, how many teams would you, in the entire NFL right now, would you say are dominant? I just don't think that's what it's going to take.
None?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's Pats, Ravens, and then, like, in the NFC, Niners, Seahawks, Packers, Vikings.
Sure.
I would not put the Cowboys.
Are you shocked if any of those teams come out of the NFC? I mean, I'm not,
No, it could be anyone.
All those teams are close enough together that it could come down to whether a pass interference gets called, you know, in the fourth quarter or... You know, whether a kick gets made or whatever. There's no 2007 Patriots or 2013 Seahawks even they weren't as dominant as their Super Bowl win makes them seem. There's no 94 49ers in the league right now. Can the Packers make the Super Bowl? Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. All right, well... Let's get back to the quarterback discussion, and I want to start with the two teams that I think are likely. Well, it's tough competition for that first draft pick, but it seems like the Bengals and the Dolphins are pretty much guaranteed. I don't know about the Dolphins, but anyways,
Brian Flores got them boys playing some football.
Well, you shouldn't drafted or signed Ryan Fitzpatrick if you didn't want to win a couple of stupid games. But in any case, I want to have this conversation less about, because we know these teams are going to draft a quarterback, yeah, right? However, somebody tweeted at me, and to his credit, he was like, it was like this internet miracle where he actually apologized to me afterwards for being rude. But he was like, I tweeted something about how the Bengals, it was when they were getting, you know, just mushed by Lamar. I was like, hey guys, you guys should just rewatch the Joe Burrow Tua game or something, you know, right? Like trying to be nice, honestly. Mm-hmm. And he was like, stick to your own fan base. I think he thought I was a Ravens fan or something. And he was like, this team doesn't need a quarterback. We need everything else. So I tweeted, I wasn't trying to dunk on him. I was like, hey Bengals fans, are you okay passing on a quarterback? And I actually think it's a reasonable conversation to have, right? Like if you were a terrible roster, is it worth it to do what the Browns did the year they took Myles Garrett, for example, and pass on a quarterback? And so I think with these two teams, that's what I want to ask you. Like, do you think there's any universe in which these two teams should not take Joe Burrow or Tua Tagovailoa?
Oh, man. The most valuable asset in all of American sport is a franchise quarterback. And I think if you think one of those guys is that, you got to do it. That said, I also like the idea of building your house before having your quarterback move in. And that's what Seattle did. You know, they spent those first couple of years under Pete Carroll with Tavares Jackson as their quarterback, a serviceable quarterback. But they drafted the line. They went and made big moves in free agency. They put together the pieces of what is the most dominant defense since early 2000s Baltimore, and allowed Russell Wilson to come up in an environment that protected him, much the way that the Steelers created an environment for Ben Roethlisberger to hand it off a bunch, throw it 15 to 18 times a game, and grow into the quarterback position, much the way the Patriots did with Tom Brady, where they went run heavy, two tight ends, great defense for years until Brady was to the point where he'd say, okay, give you the keys, just like Seattle's done with Russell Wilson. I love that approach. Problem is, you know, some houses are already framed in. Those teams aren't. I mean, you are still trying to get your electrical, you know, you get your plumbing approved and pave the driveway to the house. And so how long does it take? Let's say you take Joe Burrows, and let's say he's that guy. Let's say he's the dude, and he's a true talent. How long before he's good enough to even matter? I think the Cardinals are a really interesting case study right now, because I think that they're still a number of pieces away from being competitive, but they have who they feel is a can't-miss guy, and I kind of agree, in Kyler Murray. And so they say, okay, you know what? We are going to build a team around you. So, God, it's tough. I still default to, if you think one of those guys is that guy, you go get him. You know, if it's a Daniel Jones, you leave him alone. But if you feel like this is someone that's going to make an impact on the league for a long time, and you feel like Joe Burrow is the next Deshaun Watson, then yeah, you do it.
Well, so the Browns are kind of a good example in some ways, right? They got Miles in 2017, Baker in 2018. Would you rather have Miles and Baker? Or, and this is so unfair in a number of ways. We have no idea. Like, picking quarterbacks is like throwing a dart at a wall, right? Like, it's, you know, it's so much easier to, but just, again, like, in retrospect, would you rather Myles Garrett and Baker, or would you rather have Pat Mahomes?
Sure.
Who was picked 10th the same year.
Yeah.
So, you would take Pat Mahomes. But again, like, you know. Yeah, you don't know. And look, these guys might not be Pat Mahomes.
Pat Mahomes. 10 teams looked at Patrick Mahomes and said, nope, you're not for us.
Yes, totally. It's not just I'm not really trying to indict the Browns at all or even the process. I just think if the guy is there, it doesn't matter. By the way, you have a flooring company, right? So I feel like you know a lot about building houses. Check it out, guys. Fairhaven Floors in Seattle.
Yeah, you got it.
Did I get that right? In any case, it does. If the guy's there, it doesn't matter. And also, these two teams, in particular the Dolphins, you can go out and, you know, sign some offensive linemen. You got the cap space. You got a ton of picks in the Dolphins' case. I think obviously the Bengals are a little bit more limited. It just seems to me like this is one of those drafts where they will heavily regret not taking. Both these two teams will. And the Bengals control the board, too, if they end up at number one, which is where they are right now. So that introduces some interesting trade down possibilities where maybe they are a team where if they are able to get that mother load, they can get stacked elsewhere, consider it a transitional year, and sign a quarterback. And like we mentioned, there's guys kind of in the mix. So it's not totally – I wasn't saying it's a totally idiotic idea. I just meant, you know, fans are going to revolt. So moving from them, I think, to a team that did draft a quarterback last year, but not in the first round. And he recently returned to practice from injury, and that is Drew Lock in Denver. So it's safe to say that Joe Flacco is not going to be the Broncos quarterback next year. If they release him, he's got a dead cap hit of $13.6 million. By the way, do you remember before the season when John Elway said Joe Flacco is entering his prime or something? Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, not great. Not great. So, I wrote like kind of a mean tweet about it that wasn't that nice. I'm not going to repeat it here, but you can look it up. In any case, yeah, but they don't owe him any cash, so they're going to move on. So I think for them, the question is, do you roll with Locke next year or do you either draft or sign a guy? And they've, as Locke's been out, they've had Brandon Allen, who I might be one of the most qualified people on earth to talk about Brandon Allen because he was the Rams backup. So I actually watched him play a lot. And I think I would be shocked based on what I saw if, you know, he's got Minnesota and Buffalo next. So we'll see how that goes. But in any case, like, if you're Denver, I think the optimal outcome is Drew Lock plays well enough for you to try to build around him next year. But let me ask you this, Jackson. Let's say he doesn't play great. Let's say he's, you know, like sub Kyle Allen, you know, maybe Dwayne Haskins-y. What do you do if you're Denver?
Well, I don't let John, I don't make another quarterback decision while John Elway is in charge. That's the first thing.
Boom.
I think at this point, I mean, John Elway is one of the greatest on-field quarterbacks of my lifetime, no question. At this point, getting John Elway's seal of approval is almost a kiss of death for me when it comes to picking quarterbacks. I mean, he traded up for Paxton Lynch. He's brought in Brock Osweiler. He was saved from Brock Osweiler. He tried to throw a ton of money at him. He, you know, it's just been bad quarterback choice after bad quarterback choice. Did they have Case Keenum at one point? Am I imagining that? Then
last year. It's okay. It's easy to forget.
And then bringing in Flacco. I mean, these are just non needle movers. So like the fact that he likes Drew Lock makes me not like Drew Lock. I have no idea.
I know. That was the ding against him for me too. Let me throw out something about Elway, by the way. You know, his whole thing is tall quarterbacks, right?
Yep.
Right. Osweiler, Lynch. You know who's 6'5"? Cameron Newton.
I mean, Cam Newton already won them one Super Bowl. Why not?
Hey! Yeah, I think... God. I think if Locke fails, they might actually move on from Elway in some capacity if
they
he looks really bad this season.
They have to at this point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and I think kind of going back to like rosters and where they are, I do think this is a good defense. I feel like because their coach is Vic Fangio, they would be more inclined to... He would want a veteran over another rookie, personally. Mm-hmm. Yep. So... I was just joking, but I would put them in the Cam conversation.
Totally.
I'm going to see if the Bucks.
All of a sudden, that's a dangerous team if you've got 90% to 95% of Cam Newton.
I don't want to talk about the Bucks because I've talked a lot about how I think they're going to extend Jameis for like a year. I do want to talk about the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
So
fascinating.
Ryan Tannehill is having maybe the best season of his career. In just three starts, he's averaging career highs in passer rating, adjusted yards per attempt. He's about there in QBR. He actually leads the NFL right now in completion plus minus, the next gen stat that measures your completion percentage above expected completion percentage. Again, three games.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny to me, Jackson, just how different he is from Mariota. He's very athletic, similarly to Mariota, but he also takes a lot more risks. He's getting the ball out quicker. Now, the flip side of that is he throws turnover-worthy passes more than Mariota. Mm-hmm. But I'm already like hearing stuff out of Jacksonville, like the receivers kind of praising him and stuff. That kind of makes me think they're going to stick with him. And he's on a one-year contract. It just seems like a Titans thing to do.
It does. It totally does. Yeah, you know, I mean, I like Mariota. I thought he was going to be better as a pro than he is. What I didn't anticipate from him was him being cautious to a fault the way that he is. And in I've always liked Tannehill. And when I say I like Tannehill, I mean relative to what the national perception of him is. No one was going to be successful in Miami with Adam Gase there. I cannot imagine having to be a franchise quarterback for an Adam Gase coach team. But it's something that in Tennessee, you almost get to fly under the radar a little bit and figure out how things are going to work. I like the Titans team. I kind of like their offense. And look, he's winning right now. That game he had against the Chiefs was awesome. I mean, he went out and won that game against a good team. And you know, you ride with it. I mean, maybe he's Ryan Fitzpatrick, where he can give you a stretch of four or five games that are amazing and then throw five picks in the next one. But you roll with it for as long as you can. You use this year as house money, see what you got, and then, you know, make a decision. The scary thing is, what if he keeps doing this the rest of the year? What if he is a top 10 to 12 quarterback in the NFL the rest of the year? Do you commit a four-year contract at top 10 money to get him?
Oh, no, no, no. Oh.
See? Right. I feel right. Like that's that QB purgatory that I was talking about.
I know. I feel like if he plays at the level he has been playing at, he could get like a Keenum-style, you know, three-year that's really a two-year type deal.
Yep.
But you can't go above that.
Keenum is enough. To me. That's a great 60 comparison, minutes. Mina. What Keenum did in We're Minnesota that year, that was, right, yeah. Who are you getting? Are you getting that Case Keenum, or are you getting the Case Keenum everyone thought Case Keenum was before Case Keenum became that Case Keenum?
Mm. I don't know if it's like the Washington accent, but the way you say Case Keenum sounds like Case Keenum, which I actually really prefer. I'm going to throw that up there. Well, speaking of Case Keenum, we're going past an hour. We're just pushing this one. This is one of those long pods. Let's talk about the Redskins. So I actually watched the Bills-Washington game because I hate myself. And was not particularly inspired by the quarterback play. Haskins was fine. They didn't ask him to do anything. It was like the most vanilla. They just had him hand off to Peterson. He threw it 22 times. He was fine. I thought his decision making was pretty good. He missed a couple open guys. There's really not a lot to take away from that. He looked, again, competent. I think Case Keenum's probably better than him, but I don't think he's better than him enough, sufficiently better to make it worth playing him. So I gotta think a normal organization would just say, okay, let's just build around him. I do think they want him to be the guy next year, and I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about it because I can't imagine they move on like a Josh Rosen style.
Right. Washington. I mean, that's. Okay, so I need to back up and provide some context for this. We have a tendency, I think, to talk about quarterback as the most important person in an organization, and maybe it's true. For me, it's the owner. You need it. It doesn't matter who the Redskins quarterback is, as long as it's Dan Snyder's show. It's that place is always going to be a joke from the top down, and I would hate to be drafted there. You know, I like Dwayne Haskins. I think he was awesome at Ohio State and has the talent to be a good NFL quarterback. I just, as long as you've got that circus at the top, I don't know. You know, Alex Smith was able to win there. I think Alex Smith might be the most underrated quarterback of the last 10 to 15 years. And he managed to win there. I think they were like 7-3 when he got hurt last year. But, you know, the team is just garbage. I don't know. Yeah, sure. Find out what you have in Dwayne Haskins. I don't know.
Yeah.
That poor guy.
Okay, so another team I want to talk to where I think we know what they're going to do is Jacksonville, which had the bye this week and decided to announce that they're going back to Nick Foles, mm-hmm. Who, you know, so far this season is 6-for-8 for 75 yards and a touchdown, looked mm-hmm. great before being immediately injured. Right. Financially, they kind of have to, right? I mean, they've got mm-hmm. over $30 million in dead cap attached to his contract next year. They could potentially trade him, which, by the way, kind of introduces a funny idea, which is what if they didn't play him to preserve his trade value potentially? But I think they are a team that is in playoff contention and they see him as their best chance to win. I get it. I like Gardner Minshew. I think that unfortunately he had his worst game right when Nick Foles got healthy. It was funny, Jackson, in that game he threw two really bad picks, right?
Yep.
But when you watch the picks, they weren't bad decisions, they were just bad throws, which mm-hmm. is
better.
I actually prefer. Yeah. I think he's a really, I mean, we saw that at Wazoo. It's a leech thing. He's a great decision maker. Like between the ears, he is awesome. I think he is has that ability to make plays with his feet. I think he has downfield accuracy. He's shown that, which he didn't in college. He's obviously very affordable. I just think if it was in some ways, like I go back to the Kyle Allen thing, he kind of reminds me of Kyle Allen from a production standpoint. The only difference is they paid Nick Foles a ton of money.
Yep, you got it. And that's the thing. If Minshew was substantially, inarguably better than Nick Foles, then sure. But there's no rush with Gardner Minshew. He's house money right now. He's a 6th-round pick. There is no reason to force him into the starter position and eat a whole bunch of money on Nick Foles. Nick Foles is a good quarterback. If Foles is in the right system, he can be a great quarterback. We've seen it. And he's done it a couple of different times. And, you know, he was off to a great start in that first game with Jacksonville. So I say you absolutely lean into Nick Foles for this year. See what he's got. Maybe even next year, let him compete for it. But there's no hurry. Minshew is not a first-round pick where you have to find out what you've got. Take your time, see what Foles is, and then make a decision. But it's, I think, the right decision to go to Nick Foles as soon as he's healthy enough to play.
Let me ask you this before we move on. If you're like a Chicago or a Denver, how much would you trade for Gardner Minshew?
Man, more than a sixth, now, for sure. But
I don't think Jacksonville trades him.
No, probably not. But
what about a third?
Yeah. Oh man, if Denver, maybe Chicago. You have to get a quarterback in there. If I'm Chicago, I am doing whatever. They're probably gonna win 7-ish games this year and pick between 11 and 15. I would absolutely trade that for Cam Newton if I felt like Cam was going to be healthy. I would go all in to make sure I got Cam Newton, pair him with that defense, and go try and win a championship. Denver, Minshew seems like a better fit. I think you can put him in there, let him run around, and kind of see what you have without having a championship roster around you and that kind of pressure. If I'm Chicago, I am just all in on Cam Newton, whatever it takes.
A 6'1" quarterback saving the Broncos would be delicious.
yeah, it would.
But for Jacksonville, I just feel like you got to hang on to him just because of
Foles'
precarious health and what he's shown. So there's only one more team I want to talk about, and this is going to be a little bit – this is the weird one. What about the Chargers? Philip Rivers turns 38 this year.
What about the Chargers?
What about the Chargers? He's 19th in QBR. He's 21st in passer rating. He does not have a contract beyond this season. If he continues to play at the same level, and I think there's been games where he's just been really inconsistent this season, by my eye. And you know I love Philip Rivers. But
yeah, I do know you love Philip Rivers.
What do you do? What do you do?
You know, I am not an overly sentimental guy when it comes to the most important position in sports. I would move on probably. Well, here's the thing. Like, it would be tougher, I think, to move on if you had a fan base that the organization hadn't consistently been torching, right? Like, what's even their home city? Is it Carson? Like, you know, it's so tough. You know, I don't know how much San Diego still follows the Chargers. I don't know what you're... I mean, they are kind of a benefit of them being what they've been as an organization with their home cities and all that stuff. You actually might have the leeway with the fan base to move on because they've been so transitional in terms of where their home is going to be and all that stuff. So, I mean, I would move on. I love El Bolo. I think he's one of the great characters in the NFL. And he probably has another 5 years in him being that backup mentor who can go in and go 2-2 for you when your first round pick gets hurt or struggles or whatever. But yeah, are you winning a Super Bowl with this version with late stage Philip Rivers? I don't think so. And in the Chargers, you got a pretty good roster. The AFC's wide open. I think the goal should be to compete for a Super Bowl in the next 3 years. And I just don't see it happening with Rivers. If it never happened with him in his prime, where he is a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback, it's not happening now.
The Chargers are a team that have looked at... There's been whispers the last few drafts that they've been looking at first-round quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Every time we hear stuff. By the way, I was at Lamar Jackson's pro day in Louisville, and he disappeared for a while, and it was because he was interviewing with the Chargers. And I remember that moment thinking, huh, like, that would be a really interesting
thing. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So, yeah, and, you know, so that ship is sailed. But I think for all the reasons you outlined that go beyond football, that it might be a moment for them to make the transition. And that introduces another great variable into this quarterback carousel because, heck, Philip Rivers on a lot of these teams would be really interesting, a team yep. like Chicago.
If I'm Chicago, I would, and I can't get Cam, I would totally kick tires on Philip Rivers because I think in that offense, he can win you a lot of games.
Mm.
With that defense.
You can do a switcheroo. Cam, go to the Chargers, maybe. Philip, go to, you know, just, ooh. It's like musical chairs. It's going to be a while. It's going to be, just because of this Cam thing, Jackson, it's mm-hmm. going to kick off like such a crazy offseason. I can't wait. And we are going to cover it exhaustively here on the Mina Kimes Show. But first, I want to remind you guys of a couple of podcasts. First, please subscribe, review, rate my daily show, ESPN Daily. It's 20 minutes every day. Different topics. It's been a ton of fun. And then another podcast you absolutely should check out. I know I subscribe to it, is The Right Time with Bomani Jones. This week, Bo discusses LSU's beatdown of Alabama and why the NCAA is hustling backwards with regards to James Wiseman. Download and subscribe to The Right Time with Bomani Jones wherever you get your podcasts.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
As always, five final questions for my guest. Fifth one comes from Lenny, my co-host. First question. We talk a lot about what the best uniforms are in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of the Saints, all blacks. You know, the mm-hmm. Giants, all whites, by the way.
Love them.
Fire. From
Love them.
Fire. So let me ask you this, Jackson. What is the worst uniform in the NFL?
Probably.
And why is it Seattle's action green?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's
so
bad. Offensive on every level.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
I just hate it. You know, it's. But
so bad.
If I'm going to step outside of my corner of the continental United States and look around, I do need to say before we get to the worst that my two favorites all time
are the Chargers powder blues with the white helmets and the Cowboys Thanksgiving alternates with the white helmets. Those are my two favorites.
I do like the powder blues.
And I do like the Buccaneers creamsicles too. I would say the worst ones, I've never been able to get over how clashy the two purple tones of the Vikings uniform is between the jersey and the helmet. It just...
And the helmet, yeah.
It looks really kindergartner-ish to me. I think the Bills all blues are bad, but I love their all whites. Jacksonville's got really bad uniforms. They're greens.
Yeah, some of those are real rough, yeah.
Yeah, that's I'm trying to just go.
I don't like the Packers old school. No, the Packers old school are the khakis.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah,
that might be it for me. That one and Action Green are 1A and 1B for me. Okay. Question number two. This is actually, I think, a lot trickier than it was. Well, it's always tricky, but this year it's especially tricky. Who's the best wide receiver in the NFL?
Michael Thomas.
Rank the top three, then.
Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones. But I think, I think Devontae is making a case. If you had asked me at this time last year, I would absolutely have said Antonio Brown.
How about Tyreek Hill?
Yeah.
He's the hardest to game plan.
We're limiting it to on field, and because I think that there's some organizational risk with Tyreek Hill that we have yet to see with those other guys, and hopefully never see. Limiting it purely to on the field, Tyreek is a top five guy for sure, maybe top three. You give me one wide receiver, it's Michael Thomas.
He's awesome. This is something I thought of while I looked at that picture of Russell and Pete hugging.
I just want to say this is the non-DK Metcalf category, right? We're talking who the best receiver besides DK Metcalf is.
DK Metcalf fumbled, and I don't think it's going to be a problem with him personally. I think it was kind of a fluky, weird thing.
Yeah.
But afterwards, they showed him on the bench, and he had that lightning bolt, eye black. It was, mm-hmm. I don't know if you can really call that eye black. Yep. He did the Ziggy Stardust, and somebody posted, and they're like, man, what are you doing? And I was like, are you kidding me? He looks freaking awesome.
yeah, he's the coolest looking dude in the league.
He's so cool.
he's my guy for sure.
Question three. Which coach would you want as your grandpa?
Pete Carroll.
Non-Pete Carroll division.
Non-Pete Carroll division. As my grandpa, I don't know if he's old enough. I would love Mike Tomlin. Nope. John Harbaugh.
Yeah, John Harbaugh really won me over at that video that went viral.
Yeah,
that the Ravens put out with him and Lamar.
I'm a Harbaugh guy in general.
Oh my god!
But I
love them both so much.
Jim for sure.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. Although I do wish Jim Harbaugh was back in the NFL just for the entertainment factor. Okay. Question four. Can the Chiefs overcome their bad defense, or will it be their undoing?
Sure. Can they? Yeah. Will they? I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to imagine.
Are they still the third best team in the? Are they the third best team in the AFC?
Yes, but I wouldn't feel super comfortable betting on them against the Texans on a neutral field. It's. I think the Ravens and the Patriots. The Ravens more so than the Patriots. I think the Ravens might be the best team in the NFL this year. I don't think the gap is so big that the Chiefs can't go win. I mean, the Chiefs were a D Ford offsides away from going to the Super Bowl last year. That Patriots team was awesome. So, yeah. I don't think that they're substantially worse than they were last year. And that team...
The run defense is so bad.
It is. It is so bad. And that's why it's hard for me to imagine them beating a team like the Ravens.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great point. Yeah. Last question, as always, comes from Lenny. I'm just reading it. I didn't write it. He wants to know. He's been following our fantasy league. He sees how little I try, and how much little effort I put in, and he wants to know what it felt like losing to me anyways. It's a great question, Lenny.
Here's the thing, Mina. I beat you. That's the thing. I don't know what it's like to lose to you because I beat you.
So, yeah, but you beat me in head to head, but you're in like fifth place, and I'm
Place. No, you're ahead. I think you're third. I'm like sixth or something. You are, but you know, all that goes out the window when Mina and Jackson square off on the field, and yeah, just a really inspired performance for my guys. So, you know, I commend where you're at in the standings for sure. But yeah, I'm taking Toby's guys over Lenny's guys on the field, mano a mano.